Hello there. Welcome to the Nick Oliveri Show. I am your host, Nick Oliveri, number one best-selling independent novelist, Ukrainian-born, proud to be an American, proud to be Ukrainian, proud of who I am, and your resident weirdo. Today we're going to be talking about writing, but this episode is going to be focused mostly on craft. The way my mind kind of works, I went over this in an episode that's not going to be published because the audio is just so awful. I recorded it in my car on the way back from somewhere. But in that episode, I guess I'll rehash a little bit of what I was going over, which was basically, I take everything in, pardon me, from entertainment, from media, from literally just scrolling, from reading, from hopping from book to book to book, painting to painting to painting, and movie, sports game to sports game, and every experience in between. I take those all in as euphemisms, and my mind tries to make patterns from them. So if you're not a writer or an aspiring novelist or a poet or an aspiring poet or whatever, an aspiring screenplay writer or a very, very accomplished author, novelist, biographer, whatever, you don't have to be in the field of writing to use this. In fact, I find that studying across industries and going kind of industry agnostic to just see who's eminent in their domain, why, how, study them, study their words, study their actions. Napoleon Bonaparte, well, he was actually a writer, but you know, wasn't known for being a novelist. Let's just say that. Napoleon Bonaparte, first emperor of the French. I love studying all sorts of figures, from military leaders of old, of antiquity, contemporary, to politicians, to entrepreneurs, and especially, you know, painters, filmmakers, and everything in between. Love studying them. So that is all to say, if you're not a writer, if you don't love to either write or read, like, a lot, this episode is still very much for you. If you're dedicated to any craft, I'm talking any. I'm talking marketing on social media, marketing in general, advertising. If you're in sales, if you're into the art of graphic design, if you're a painter, if you're dedicated to a craft, motherhood, fatherhood, parenthood, becoming a better brother, becoming a better friend, becoming a better lover, then this episode may be your end. End as in goal, not finality to your life. Don't take it grimly. Let's get into it. So all that is to say, this is a euphemism. I'm going to be talking about writing throughout the podcast and the basic root of what I believe to be powerful writing. A little bit of Nietzsche here. And then we're going to talk some Star Wars, and I'm going to get right into the Star Wars. So lots here, lots of connections, and all that is to say, everybody here is welcome, and I hope you gain something. If you don't gain any insights, if I bring nothing new to the table, if you knew everything I'm saying, I hope I leave some food for thought. But I guarantee you there's going to be some nuggets in here, at least one, where you sit back and say, I never knew that. So you're going to learn, you're going to think. Maybe you laugh, maybe you cry. Let's do it together. Here we go. I was thinking about the Joyce Carol Oates episode I did the other day, and how she said, where is that quote? Yes, the most powerful writing, this is from Joyce Carol Oates in a advertisement from Masterclass. Yes, it was from Masterclass. I didn't want to say the company last episode. I'm saying it here. I don't care. It was a Masterclass advertisement with Joyce Carol Oates teaching writing. So, like, I mean, what better teacher if you want to write well in terms of storytelling and masterful living novelists than Joyce Carol Oates, or just writers in general, essayists, poets, you name it. She said the most powerful writing often comes from confronting taboos. I'm going to talk about what the most powerful writing always comes from. And I think Joyce Carol Oates actually hit the nail on the head. I need to expand on it, and actually it goes a little bit deeper than that. So we're going to start off. We're going to get right into it with some Star Wars. Yep, That's Star Wars. Now, a lot of you, some of you, I'm not sure how this audience goes, but yet anyway, many of you may look at Star Wars either from afar or just as a casual enjoyer and say, okay, the Sith, you might not even know what a Sith is, but the Sith are the guys, the red lightsabers, or girls, actually. There's some female Sith, some bionic Sith, and otherwise, some non-gendered Sith. And they're the ones with the red lightsabers. They wear black, and their faces are disfigured. They're often either ugly or robotic and unhuman, and they're clearly the bad guys. And then you got the Jedi, who are the peacemakers, the cool guys, and gals that that fight for good. What does it mean to be good? I'm not going to dive into that right now. Boy, that's another episode, maybe another series. But you might just look upon Star Wars and say, okay, that's the clear dichotomy. It's the good guys fighting the bad guys. It's a tale as old as time. It's a tale older than time, really. Like, before time, this was still going on. But there's a little bit more to that. And the Sith and the Jedi, the Sith being, you know, the people who wielded the red lightsabers, the Force sensitives, and the people who wielded the blue and the green, like Yoda, if you know that name, Luke Skywalker, ever heard of him? I'm going to get into some of their codes. I'm not going to talk about what's canon and what's not, because, I've been boycotting Disney for a long time, and we're not going to talk about why, except for the fact that they screwed up Star Wars for me. Let's get into the Sith code. Why am I doing this? Well, it's gonna come back to writing. I guarantee you it's going to come back to writing. We're going to circle back, and everything is going to tie together. I swear it to you. And you're saying, Nick, why the heck are you going into a code of ethics for fictional villains in a sci-fi space opera? Well, let me tell you why. I want to talk about the most powerful way to write. The Sith, even though they may be seen as the bad guys, have a rationale. Just like any good villain, if you write them, or if you're just consuming a movie or a book or otherwise, any sort of story, there's usually an antagonist and a protagonist. Nowadays in postmodernism, the lines get a little blurry, but in more stories, but really, there's usually an antagonist, a protagonist, what you're taught in first grade. So the antagonists in Star Wars, for all intents and purposes, not going to dive into it, they still have a code of ethics. They still have a rationale. They're not just power hungry for power's sake. They actually have a worldview around why they crave power. They have a worldview for it. They look at power as a means. This is going to get back to writing. This is going to get back to craft. Let's go into the Sith code, because they have a very simple set of beliefs that you must believe in to be a Sith. Otherwise, it makes no sense. So you need to accept these tenets. But I'm really going to focus on the very first one. I'll read you the rest of the lines, though. Pay very close attention to the first one. I'm going to repeat it twice. Peace is a lie. This is first line of the Sith code. Say it again. Peace is a lie. There is only passion. Through passion, I gain strength. Through strength, I gain victory. Through victory, my chains are broken. The Force shall free me. What does that first line say, though? So, yeah, a lot of interesting lines to unpack. I'm not going to unpack them besides the first. Peace is a lie. The Sith, in order to be a Sith, in order to actually like follow their worldview and go into their dogma and become one, you need to accept that there is no peace. Peace is just a word to the Sith. It's a concept that doesn't exist in the physical world. Kind of intriguing, right? Isn't that a little bit intriguing? For Star Wars fans and non-Star Wars fans alike, casuals, really hardcore fans, people that have never heard of Star Wars or barely know anything about it, is that not a little bit intriguing? It's like, I always thought just Darth Vader was a murderous, you know, genocidal maniac who just killed thousands of people with his hands and his red swingy light thingy. Well, he abides by a code. And that code is based on its core tenet that there is no such thing as peace. Therefore, what's the opposite of peace? Conflict. Oh, there it is. Root of the episode, conflict. What were you taught in first grade or kindergarten, depending on where you went and how affluent your community was, or if you went to private or public school, and how good your teachers were? When you were doing your writing workshop, or when you were learning about stories, maybe a little later, say third, fourth, fifth grade in a middle school, and you're talking about story structures, and here's the plot mountain. Have you heard of that plot mountain? And you can have a double plot mountain. You can do, you know, you kind of learn the rules to break them, right? But what is the central tenet of a story? What makes a story interesting? What makes a story a story? Because otherwise, it's just like, I went to the store to get some milk. I stopped my car. I went inside. My card was accepted after I picked the gallon of whole. I prefer whole to 2%. And then I drove back. The roads weren't slick. Everything was fine. Did you see any conflict in that story? Now, granted, I made that up on the spot. Not a very entertaining story anyways. But also, it's not just because I made it up on the spot. It's because there was no conflict in it. There were no stakes. I went to the store for some milk. Now, if I added an assailant, or if I mentioned that my car failed, or my car couldn't start, or my card got declined, there were so many instances in that story where I could have just, in fictional story, by the way, where I could have flipped it on its head, and then you go, oh boy. I'm invested. Peace is a lie, the bad guys of Star Wars say. What do the good guys say, you might be asking? They have a code too. They have a code too. They have a Jedi code. They have a mantra. The quote, good guys. And they say, there is no emotion. There is peace. They live in a world with a fictional world with a title called Star Wars that hangs over their head. What does the word war mean? War is akin, synonymous with conflict of any sort. A cold war between two people, a cold war between two nations, a hot war, an actual war between two planets, two galaxies, two ideologies could be at war and at conflict. The Jedi reject that. Now, they don't say there is no conflict, but they say there is no emotion. Interesting. And they say there is peace. So, radical beliefs from both sides. There is no emotion, or peace is a lie. Whoa. As a writer, you must be a Sith if you want to write powerfully. Do you understand what I'm saying? Hear me clearly. Hear me very clearly. When the Sith say peace is a lie, what they're saying is conflict abounds in the immediate, in the interim, in the intermediate, and throughout your life. You will only have conflict. You will only have turmoil. Therefore, are you going to acknowledge it first with our first tenet and overcome it? And use that overcoming for strength, power, and gain? Or are you going to ignore it? Therefore, either being weakened in some way or suffering even worse. Because the Sith say, and by the way, folks, I believe that most of us, you know, a lot of Gen Z and millennials are getting out there in the world now. And they're becoming even more cynical for the first time after being, you know, a teenager, high school. Okay, some or many of you went to college, and then you kind of, maybe you were in a bubble. Maybe you had to work your way through it. I don't know. Things are tough regardless, but you start to realize some things when you get to, you know, late teens, early 20s, mid-20s, late 20s. You start to realize things in those later formative years where you go, wait a second. Most things suck most of the time. I'm not advocating for cynicism, and nor are the Sith. But you, my point is, as an artist, as a salesperson, as a business person, as an entrepreneur, as a filmmaker, a writer, a novelist, a poet, screenplay writer, you are probably a Sith in your beliefs, or partially a Sith. Now, you may say, no, Nick, I'm not, because I acknowledge that the world, you know, can suck in a lot of ways and people can mistreat you. However, Nick, what you're missing is you can find peace on Earth. You can get to peace, if not on Earth, at least within yourself, right? I would say, you know what? Maybe for you. And I'm not going to reject that notion straight up. I can't disprove it. I'm not going to go through the mental gymnastics to like disprove it. I can't argue with you there. I will concede that point. But you might also say, while I can't achieve peace, most things still suck and conflict still abounds. And I'll say, yep. I'll nod my cap to you. I'll say, yeah. Now, the statement of the Sith, the Star Wars bad guys, the red lightsaber folks, they say peace is a lie. So really, you know, there is no peace. There is no peace. It's a lie. So they're not even saying only that you can't achieve peace. They're saying it's a concept that is contrived, controlled, made up, and passed on to you to make you believe it's actually a betrayal of your own consciousness, of your own conscience, really, of your being, of your existence, that other people told you that there's such thing as peace in this world on Earth, or in Star Wars, on like in the galaxy. You can be a Jedi and say there is no emotion, there is peace. If you're one of my listeners, or really anyone, you probably feel plenty of emotions all the time. I'm not really going to comment on this one way or another, but George Lucas, straight up, this is a fact, said the Jedi are basically, their code is made off of, it's inspired by Buddhism, the Jedi code, not the Sith. What does this have to do with writing, Nick? You're 17 minutes in, what does this have to do with writing? I'm trying to write better or something. I want to learn something, or maybe you just want to hear a fool talk, in which you came to the right place. Okay. When Joyce Carol Oates said, "The most powerful writing often comes from confronting taboos," I'm going to take it one step further. Intertwine that notion, confronting taboos, most powerful writing often comes from that, with the Sith code that peace is a lie, and say this. The most powerful writing can only be done one way, confrontation. The most powerful writing can only be done one way, that is confrontation. Your writing must be confrontational. Nick, does that mean it needs to be angry? Because there are plenty of books that sell a ton that aren't angry. They're very cozy, actually. Well, there are a lot of books that are softer in prose style, that don't have an angry tone, that have a rather subdued tone, possibly. And yes, you're right. You don't have to be angry to be confrontational. In your writing, in your affect, in your prose style, and even in your plot. But you do need to be confrontational. Let me address the second part of this hypothetical argument. Well, there are so many cozy books out there that do well. There are so many books that, and I'm talking, you know, novels here, fiction. There's so many works of fiction that, like, you know, don't really, you know, if they have conflict, it's like, it's not taboo, it's not very confrontational, it's like, or it's very, very, very subdued. It's more like a cozy read, like a mood read, you know, like, and I'm sure there's some mood readers listening, and I get that. I mood reading, you know, you kind of do everything by mood, kind of, but I'm not going to get into that theory. I understand where you're coming from there. If you say, I've read some really powerful writing and it doesn't confront anything. It just talks about leaves in the forest or the snow falling down. And it's just so beautiful. It's powerful to me. It struck a chord with me. Then I would argue that that writer, and I'm really trying to Iron Man this opposing argument. Maybe that writer or that poet was talking about confronting themselves, their self, confronting their own darkness, confronting the seasons, confronting how crisp and harsh the wind can be in the winter, confronting maybe what they don't want, their own shadows that their desires create, and diving really deep within themselves. See, powerful writing can be very contemplative. It can be very subdued. Confrontational writing doesn't have to be ecstatic and angry and energetic and choppy, you know, like Hunter S. Thompson-esque. Think about The Old Man and the Sea, which I want to do a whole episode on, by the way. Old Man and the Sea by Ernest Hemingway. What does he say? He says, and you know what, like, it was a different time, but, you know, he meant this for 2000 years. It was called mankind. So I'm not going to substitute his quote when he says man for human, even though he probably meant most people. I don't know what he meant, but I'm going to say the quote because it's very powerful. It's very confrontational. And in the quote, he's talking about confrontation, war, conflict, even bloodshed, awful things that happen, that occur from Earth. A man is not made for defeat. A man can be destroyed, but never defeated. A man is not made for defeat. A man can be destroyed, but never defeated. That's what he said in The Old Man and the Sea, one of my favorite books. That was Ernest Hemingway. You're taught in middle school, elementary school, like really early on, depending on where you went, depending on, you know, like if it was, you know, what the teacher was all about, if you even had like writing workshop or English or whatever, story structure and really, really, really basic plot outlines. And the inciting incident is based on conflict. Something has to conflict for a story. Why is that? It's built into us. Why is that? We are over 22 minutes in, and I would have to dive deeper into why conflict, but is so integral to stories, but I'm going to have to conflate conflict and confrontation here. You need to confront. You know, Joyce Carol Oates said the most powerful writing often comes from confronting taboos. Yeah. Yeah. If you want to make something really powerful, go and say something or put in a character or have a theme, have a whole plot around confronting a social taboo. Confront or don't. Confront an ideology. Okay. Confront a deeply rooted one, or confront a new one, or confront a novel one, confront a long past one that's been discarded, confront a person, a public person, a type of person, a gender, confront yourself, maybe, confront your own weaknesses. That's the really tough one. If we want to get Star Wars-y, it's Luke and Dagobah, you know. Going into that little cave, facing what he fears the most. I believe Vader was in there, got his butt kicked. And Luke said, "I'm not scared." And Yoda said, "You will be." Do you know how much more interesting, how much better, how much that attacks and attaches itself to the soul in that movie? Something like that, that anticipation of conflict and fear and vitriol and anger and defeat and destruction, making for an anticipation of some great climax more than just imagine a story with no conflict. That's why I'm kind of bringing this all up, is you want to write powerfully, you can actually compensate for some of your, and everyone does have deficiencies in their writing. It's like anything. You know, it's like hockey players. Some, even the best hockey players, there are always going to be people that have better hands than you. But if you are the fastest skater, then you can compensate for the hands. Or if you have the hardest shot, you can maybe compensate for, quickness. You can compensate for stick handling. You, if you don't have the best vision, maybe you're a sniper, or maybe you're a big hitter. Either way, in the same goes for writers, as does with anybody else trying to do anything or devote themselves to any craft, is you're going to have a linguistic or writing deficiency in some way, We're not all the best rounded, most perfect individuals ever to write and grace a page. No one ever has been. We have strengths and we have weaknesses. So to compensate for your weaknesses, write powerfully, I urge you. I haven't given you or anyone a call to action. I haven't given you a call to action this whole time. Now I am. Write powerfully. It will mask and make better your writing weaknesses while highlighting your strengths. It's going to endear your audience or polarize your audience, but it's going to give you attention and it's going to make your writing matter. It's going to make it mean more. Confront something. If you confront yourself or something about yourself, then it's going to mean more to you and possibly others because you're not alone and they aren't either. If you confront something about society, if you confront an ideology or a religion or lack thereof, if you confront the secularism of society today, if you confront a whole nation, a whole government maybe, a musician, some celebrity, something, an archetype, the industry, capitalism, socialism. Confront your past. The reader is going to resonate more deeply with what you got, with what you've written down, than if you didn't lean into the confrontation of life, the conflict that abounds in the immediate on earth, the conflict next to you, within you, all around you, in your future, whether it's 1 second from now, an hour from now, or 5 months from now, you are going to run into very, very big conflicts and really, really small ones. You're probably in one right now and you're thinking about it. Maybe there's something the Sith can teach you. Joyce Carol Oates, you never thought you'd hear that in one sentence, but there it is. If you want to write powerfully, there's one way to do it. Confrontation. Confront something in your writing. Do it. This was the Nick Oliveri Show. Thank you for listening. I got links down in the description. You could follow me on Amazon. I'm working on a couple new releases for 2025. One novel that it's been years in the works. And one collection of poems called This Book is Expensive, coming out later 2025. I also have tour dates set. Now I'm touring far less in 2025. But I will be in Northern Philadelphia, Eastern Pennsylvania, the weekend of April 26th and 27th, and in Exton, Lehigh Valley on Saturday, Lehigh Valley Barnes & Noble on Saturday, signing some copies of my Stories of Shadow and Flame series, The Conjurer, and on Sunday at the Center Valley Barnes & Noble location. So that is April 27th, Sunday. Signing the same. Copies of The Conjurer. Links in the description. You can always follow me on all sorts of platforms below. YouTube. Subscribe. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you all. And just remember, peace is a lie. There is only passion.